Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The online posts can seem unrelenting. Your friends are eating at fabulous restaurants, traveling to faraway beaches, getting promoted, losing pounds, raising beautiful and talented children. Online, we put our best photos forward, our best foot, our best face, our best moments. Has it turned us into a nation of braggarts? This hour on Point, who we become when we go online. You can join the conversation. Have you tried to keep up with your friends, their marvelous lives online, or grown weary of how wonderful everyone else's lives seem to be? Are you celebrating your great moments with them, or are we all just bragging? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. A special welcome today to our newest listeners on WDDE in Dover, Delaware, and at KOSU in Oklahoma. We are glad you are here. Joining us first today from Miami, Florida, is Elizabeth Bernstein. She writes a column about relationships for the Wall Street Journal. Her column last week was, "Are We All Braggarts Now?" Elizabeth, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
How great was your day yesterday?
It was perfect.
Didn't get a chance to check out your Facebook page. Now, look, so what do you see is going on here? I mean, people are communicating a lot on Facebook. They're talking about all kinds of things in their lives. You step back and say, hey, wait a minute. We've kind of lost track of what's going on. It's not just Facebook, of course, all kinds of social media. But we've lost track of what's going on, and we're bragging. Make the case.
Well, I think that we're behaving differently online than we do in person. So in person, if we see each other, we want to catch up. We're going to say what happened that's good, what happened that's bad. But online, we are just putting forward this idealized version of our lives. And after a while, it doesn't ring true and it's annoying.
Give us some examples of the kind of thing, I don't know, comments, photos, remarks, reports that look to you like they add up to the braggart nation.
Well, I just got the best gift from my best husband ever. You know, I just lost 5 pounds, went to the gym and swam in record time. Here's my beautiful child asleep like an angel in the back seat. These things are, it's bragging, and I don't think we realize it. We're putting them up, we're proud of ourselves, we're happy, but I don't think we realize how we're coming across to the world, really.
Well, are you sure they see it that way? I mean, you open right up and you with some examples like that, and you say, folks, this is bragging and it's out of control. Well, who says?
I do. So I can say that I think I've heard from a lot of people in the last week since this column ran last Tuesday. And a lot of people said, you're right. This is driving me crazy. I log onto Facebook and after 5 minutes, I'm disgusted. I feel like my life is horrible after looking at everybody else's perfect life. But some people wrote and said, look, you're completely wrong. I'm happy for my friends. I'm happy when something nice happens to me. And this isn't bragging. So bragging really is in the eye of the beholder, I guess.
So, I mean, you're giving it a general kind of label as a tipping toward bragging. Our listeners see it both ways. I mean, Marcus writes to us. He says, my brother's daily picture of his kids is annoying, and not just because they're better looking than mine, you know, enough already. But Lynn says, come on, lighten up. Share the good news openly and willingly. If people see it as bragging, that's their problem. And so what if somebody posts what they had for breakfast? It's Facebook. What harm does it do? Don't like, don't read.
Exactly. But I think what we have to keep in mind is that bragging has sort of a competitive edge. So it's one thing to say, oh, you know, here's my Cheerios I had for breakfast. It's another thing to say, look, here's the organic eggs that my beautiful husband raised in our perfect garden. And this is the way a lot of Facebook looks. It's sort of a, I'm better than you. My life is so wonderful. That's what I'm trying to say here. We really have to be careful about that.
Well, why would people do that? I mean, and people are agreeing as well. Tony says, absolutely. I'm sick of hearing how wonderful my Facebook friends think their lives are. But why would people put up an idealized version of themselves on Facebook? I mean, we all know life is not ideal all the time.
Exactly. First of all, we're in a very competitive environment. We're in a bad economy, and we've learned over the last few years that we really need to market ourselves. And here comes Facebook and all the other social networking sites, and what is that but to market? And so we step right up to the occasion, which is great in many ways. The problem is we often – braggarts make a great first impression, but that goes down quickly if they keep bragging. So you want to manage that sort of marketing of yourself and that impression you're making. mind, and you want to make sure that you're not pushing it over the edge of bad impression.
You're going to win this, or are we just in a new era where people want to communicate, they've got the means to communicate, they communicate a lot, and what humans do when they communicate is, in no small part, talk about themselves?
We love to talk about ourselves. So there's research that shows that our brains, when we talk about ourselves, the same areas of our brains light up as when we're thinking about food, money, sex. So these are the reward areas of our brain. We love this. But I think it's not too late for us to step back and say, wait, it's fine to say nice things, but we can stop and listen to the tone and listen to how much we're putting out there, and we can manage it better. I really think we could do that. We need to think about it.
You have this great story, that just not just online, I guess, but this is an Indianapolis postal service worker talking with her, I guess, church or, I don't know, congregation anyway. Share that story with us.
So this woman is interesting. She has a freelance gig in the evenings. She works for an online magazine. She gets to interview all the celebrities that come through town and video them. And so she's constantly name dropping to her friends and family. And she's thinking, this is my career. I'm making this. And finally, she's in church one day, and her cousin looks at her. She's talking to a few people, and he says,
and this is not just any cousin. This is a cousin to whom she had donated a kidney a couple years ago.
Exactly. Okay. She had donated her kidney to this man. And she's telling an older man in church about her job, and she thinks he's interesting. And she thinks she's being interesting. What she's trying to do is say, look, I'm an interesting person. I have something to say. So her cousin, the one she donated the kidney to,
right.
says to her, will you stop with the name dropping already? And she just was so taken aback. She thought, well, if you of all people think this about me, what does everybody else think when they see it? Because she said, she admitted, I'm name dropping all the time, online, offline, anywhere I can go.
Well, you there operating on my kidney, telling me to stop dropping names. But this the question it raised for me was, is it really so different online? Is there a difference in behavior? I mean, you know, people make the case you can go all the way back to the cave drawings when people, you know, put their red hands up on the caves in Lascaux, France, whatever it was. You know, humans have always wanted to kind of say, I'm here. Look, I'm here. It's me. I'm cool.
Exactly. So this bragging certainly goes on offline, and it always has. But the issue is, and then there used to be the Christmas letter, right? So you would send the Christmas letter, say all the nice things that happened during the year. The problem now is the Christmas letter goes on all day, every day online. That's one thing. But another thing is we do behave differently online. If we go into the office, we're going to be careful about what we tell our coworkers. You're not going to run in, I lost 5 pounds this weekend, I swam in record time, because you're going to have to look at them, roll their eyes. So online, we don't see that eye roll, so we lose our inhibition. And that's what's happening.
Elizabeth Bernstein joins us from Miami. And the Wall Street Journal, her piece is, Are We All Braggarts Now? You can read it at our website, onpointradio.org. Keith Wilcox joins us right now from New York City. He's professor of marketing at the Columbia Business School, researching the effects of social media on self-esteem and consumption. Keith, thanks a lot for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What do you see going on here? Are we all braggarts now, or is the whole definition, the whole meaning of it changed? You kind of got to put your shine out there, and it's just normal behavior.
You know, that's a tough question. I think there's this basic human motivation to always share positive information about yourself. I just think the tools for doing it have made it your audience a much larger audience. So, you know, if you're at a party and you're talking to a few select people, you know, that's one thing. But with social networks, you can talk to hundreds of people at the same time. So it may seem like you're a braggart.
Well, why does that crank up our, you know, marching out our positive parade of accomplishments or dinners or vacations? Why does social media encourage that?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I think by their very nature, they're platforms for self-presentation. If everybody's presenting this positive self-image of themselves, that's just a social norm on social networks. Also, I think Elizabeth kind of hit on the point about not really receiving the negative feedback. So if I'm at a party and I'm talking on and on and on about how great my life is, I might find myself suddenly talking to myself. But on a social network, you just put it out there and no one's going to walk away.
They're not going to walk away. And maybe everything gets ratcheted up. If people are putting their best stuff out there, it's cataloged. You can always go and see it. Maybe the old keeping up with the Joneses dynamic just becomes much more nonstop. Maybe the whole list has to be up there or you're a dweeb.
I think so. I think that I know I've felt that myself. I've looked at Facebook for a few minutes and started to feel a little bad. My life's not perfect, and thought, aha, here's something I can post, and it trumps all of you. I'm going to do that right this minute. So I do think that we have this. It does. It makes us ratchet it up, just like you said.
I've got responses online here from, let's see. John says, when others do it, it's bragging. When I do it, it's news. You know, I'm sure that feeling is. And then another John, Steve says, hey, I'm freaking bragging way more than you dudes. I mean, the biggest bragger is up there and proud of it. There's a superlative he's grabbing. I mean, Keith, I think that sense that it's news when I do it, but when you do it, I may weigh it and wonder about it a little more is out there.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I mean, let's face it, we're all to some extent kind of self-centered. And we think that what we do is great, but what others do, maybe it's not so good. So I think that kind of plays into it, your desire to kind of present your best positive self. But when you see other people doing it, you may look at them in a little bit of a negative fashion.
So is there a way to get out of this competition if it's a competition? I mean, do people just check out? In a certain generation, you've got to be on Facebook.
To some extent, but you know what? I always love that ignore button. You can always ignore people if you want to.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're asking this hour, in the age of social media, if all of our posts and updates on kids and dates and meals out and all the rest have turned us into a nation of braggarts. Elizabeth Bernstein is with us from the Wall Street Journal. It joins us from Miami today, and she pretty much says, yes, she says, folks, this is bragging, and it's out of control. Elizabeth is in Miami. Keith Wilcox at the Columbia Business School is in New York City. And with me in the studio right now is David Gerzoff, professor of social media and marketing at Emerson College, owner of Big Fish PR and branding firm. So he knows both sides of the street here. David, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Always great to be back.
What's going on with this? Is this just great, you know, sharing? This is what it is these days, or please, no, enough already?
I think it's a little bit of both. But the bragging has been around with us for a long time. It's well documented in historic literature, Greek mythology. Certainly, the idea of social media and participating as humans in social media has been around for a while. So, really, the question is, what's happening? Why is this all coming to a head here? And what we have now are these self-publishing tools, mm-hmm. where it used to be, you know, 15 years ago, the only like glorious couple that you would see was maybe Bruce Willis and Demi Moore at the checkout aisles in the supermarket.
In People Magazine or
People
some
Magazine,
star
exactly. Yeah. And you'd have an update on them every week.
Right.
Now we have updates on everybody all the time. And but you know, along with these self-publishing platforms, also comes self-editing. And as Keith was mentioning before, there's the ignore button, right? So if I'm putting up all this grandiose, great stuff about what's going on in my life, and my fans and the people that I share my life with don't care about it, they can turn me off. They can give me feedback. They can share, say, "Hey, buddy, you're oversharing. You know, cut it back, or I'm going to cut you off."
Do people actually say that?
Oh yeah.
Enough already? Elizabeth, what's the problem? They can just say, no, thanks. I've had enough. Thanks a lot. I don't want to hear any more about your wonderful this and that, Elizabeth.
I think one of the things that goes on is that we know what these people, what their lives are offline. So we know the reality. And then if we go online and their life is so perfect and we know it's not, and you want to be a good friend, and a friend shares the good and the bad. So that disconnect can be very irritating. So I do think that we sometimes do call each other and say, hey, you know, I know, you know, stop this. Tell me what's really going on.
It's interesting. I mean, we've got Rex who says, no more baby pictures, all caps here, writing to us online. But then ASC says, hey, that's stupid. I'm always happy when my friends are happy or excited. John says, you know, this sounds like sour grapes. You know, tweet, what are you supposed to do? Tweet like you enjoy your life less, Keith?
Yeah, I think it's definitely not a social norm to tweet all the bad things that happen to you. People always want to share the positive information. But related to that point of the ignore button, I do think the ignore button's really a subtle way of telling somebody that they've gone overboard, and sometimes people don't catch up on that signal. It's not the same way as an eye roll or something that's more in your face that you can kind of be aware of.
Let's hear what our listeners think of it all. Brett in Brighton, Massachusetts. Brett, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think the ignore button is actually a little too subtle because when you hit it, the person sending out the tweets or the Facebook, they don't know necessarily that you've put them on ignore. But what I wanted to say really was that I think it's not so much bragging, but some kind of narcissism or some kind of narcissistic compensation, which makes me sound like, you know, amateur psychiatrist here. But, you know, encouraged by the forum itself where you get these positive feedbacks of, you know, how many people hit like and how many people gave you a thumbs up for whatever you said. I wonder if some of this is people talking to themselves as a form of sort of compensation, kind of a self-therapy. Well, you know, things aren't as great as I paint them online, but I'm going to, if I say these things enough times, if I put every tiny minute detail that I love about my life online and I get all these thumbs up back, it makes me feel great about myself.
Well, I mean, narcissism, I guess, is how you think about yourself. The thumbs up, at least somebody else is doing some thinking here. You know, David, it makes me wonder if maybe this is a kind to look at it in a warmer way. Maybe this is people bucking each other up, saying, look, we know it's a tough world, but there's a lot of good stuff going on. Look at all the good stuff going on here. Tell me about yours. Maybe this is the way we, you know, it's like a mutual support society. Buck up.
Well, certainly by sharing information with each other, it makes us better as a society, at least in my opinion. When you see people sharing ideas of like, hey, I had this great meal. Well, yeah, okay, so you're saying that's a great meal, but maybe I want to try that meal. Maybe I'll try that recipe, or maybe I'll try that restaurant.
So, Elizabeth, maybe it's just positive mental attitude here, and we're all encouraging each other on some great upward arc of, you know, enthusiasm for life.
I think that is true to a certain extent, and I agree with what David's saying, that you see some great meal or a great recipe somebody's posted and you do want to try it, or somebody said, hey, I read this article, I want to look at it, and so it sort of broadens my perspective on the world to look at what the people that I care about are doing online and what they're recommending and talking about. But what happens is, again, we don't know how people are perceiving us. We're not seeing that ignore button when it happens. We're not seeing the eye roll. And so we don't know that a lot of people are probably just thinking that we're ridiculous. And what I've seen, which is really troublesome, is people copy a status update and send it to friends offline, send it an email and say, oh my gosh, so-and-so is out of control. Have you seen this one? Have you seen that one? And so do you really want that? Do you want your friends talking about your status updates in a very negative way? That's what I'm worried about.
Bob writes to us that he was out cliff diving in Brazil with Tom Brady this morning. So people know how to do this. Chris says, did I mention my kids are honor roll students? Brant says, sorry, I can't hear you over the sound of how awesome I am. And Amanda writes in, I wish there was consistency between Facebook life and real life. And that gets to the sort of persona that we create there. Caroline in Arlington, Virginia is calling. Hi, Caroline, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I am wondering whether there are differences in Elizabeth's study between people in metropolitan areas and people in rural areas. And, Tom, you touched upon the word that I was also going to bring up, which is narcissism. My biggest concern about Facebook is that I feel it's very narcissistic. And I also, you know, we're communicating with each other over cyberspace, which, you know, I like to do with people I am far away from, but I don't use Facebook much. I am worried about the security of my comments if I choose to make any. I'm looking for a job, and I don't want my employer to see me spending so much time on Facebook, even though I guess they check for clout scores or whatever.
Yep.
And I wonder how much time people are spending on Facebook in their actual workplaces. I know it's done on business time, on other people's computers, and I just think it's wrong, and people should get out and enjoy life. It's too short to be sitting in front of my computer and not getting out and doing things.
Okay.
Real life. Thank you. I'll take my
sure,
phone.
Sure, good. Take a nice hike and then tell us about it. But Keith, what about it? You know, come on, get off it. We're sort of prisoners of narcissism here. Do you buy that, or is that just, you know, somebody who's not with the program?
Well, so this actually gets into a research project that I have with Andrew Stephen at the University of Pittsburgh. We've actually studied this, and we've looked at this research is still forthcoming. So we're looking at what happens when people browse a social network and how it affects their psychology, such as things like self-reported self-esteem and narcissism. And we actually find for some individuals, they actually self-report higher levels of narcissism after browsing a social network compared to not browsing.
I mean, after reading about their own great lives or about others, or how's it work?
Well, yeah. So we just had them literally surf their own webpage and their newsfeed. Look at their newsfeed.
You mean I put up not good stuff about myself, and then I go back and read it, and I feel good.
Exactly. You look at what you're posting. And actually, the more we focus them on the information that they're sharing with others, the stronger the effect that we find. So it's really about this inflated self-image that you're presenting to others in your network that is kind of leading to this effect.
David, is it inflated if it ends up with people actually having a bolstered self-image?
Yeah, so there's definitely some inflation there. When I sit and I talk with my students about this, we usually start off with a really simple story that we all grew up on, which is The Boy Who Cried Wolf. And we talk about this in terms of the updates and what it is that you're putting out there, what it is that you're sharing about yourself, right? Are you putting out things that are you know, so out there and just, you know, really turns people off? Or are you, you know, crying wolf when it's appropriate? You know, are you oversharing? It's the number of times mm-hmm. that you're updating. Mm-hmm. And what is the content quality of the things that you're sharing? Is it things that are just about you, or things that are about you and your friends, things that are about your interests, what it is that you want to do and where you want to go in life? And sort of setting the stage for that.
So what? It's like anything else in life. There's sort of different people engage this medium with different success rates, different quality of engagement.
It's like a library, okay? You could take a kid to a library. They could pick out any zillion number of books. Right now, what we're talking about is this one sort of very slight segment of being very egocentric in what we're updating on. But there's a whole slew of different things that can happen with social media.
Hey, Elizabeth, there's the notion that this is just one book in a great library of stuff we do on Facebook. Maybe you're overestimating how big a deal bragging is.
You know, it could be. And again, as I said before, it's in the eye of the beholder. So if you think about who are the people, if you're just talking to a few of your close family members, and yes, they want to see every picture of your perfect children, that's great. But if you're broadcasting to a lot of people across Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, you've got hundreds and hundreds of friends, who most of whom are acquaintances, then again, you want to be careful about managing this image. And it doesn't help you to come across looking like you're fully yourself.
But you sure can. Grace in Santa Barbara, California. Grace, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes, all this just rings so true for me, and I thank you so much for having us on the program. And what I find is so amazing is the lack of productivity here. There's such a loss of work, I guess. And I found myself really losing productivity as I was on Facebook, and so I got rid of my account 4 or 5 years ago, and I see friends, I guess, spending hours that they could be socializing for real with real humans and learning and working and going down the tubes. Really.
So, Grace, does that make it a bad thing or just something that you found difficult to handle? I mean, there must be people who are perfectly capable of just checking in on it, you know, once, I don't know, a day or a week, and not being too, you know, all tangled up in it, Grace.
Sure. I think just on average, if you look at the average user, they probably use it more than once or twice a week. And adding all of these iPhones and Twitter and Facebook and all of these different social networks together, I guess, is a real loss on average. I think it's a really hard thing to control oneself, so.
Yeah, no question about that. I mean, people have an itch to check it, see what's going on. But, David, it takes us to this question of whether all this social communication is sort of improving our lives, making us more empathetic, more plugged in with each other, less isolated. Or, I mean, Grace in Santa Barbara says, whoa, you know, waste of time.
Again, it really depends on how you use it. For productivity, I actually find I'm even more productive using social media. I'm connecting with people, like-minded people around the world. When it comes to products and services that I'm interested in, I'm hearing about how those products and services are being used. And maybe it's in the context of some, you know, very narcissistic use of that product or service, like, I don't know, a hang glider or something that's on a fantastic sunset glide. But the fact is that I'm learning about it that way. So It really comes down to, you know, how you use it as a tool. And this is how Keith mentioned social media. Is these are a series of tools that we have at our disposal for sharing and for listening. And you know, there's a lot of listening going on, not just sharing and oversharing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of voyeurism to social media, to Facebook and
sure.
to Twitter. And so
you can call it voyeurism or just a real interest in your friends' lives, and you get to see, wow, they did have a great time at the beach, or it was, you know, what an amazing swim that must have been.
So there's a lot that can be taken out of it. But at the same time, it's important, and to Elizabeth's point, it's important to be aware of this new platform and how it really is affecting us. I mean, we've had these fundamental platform changes every, you know, couple hundred years. We had when the printing press came out, all of a sudden people were able to print autobiographies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had, you know, prophets printing out books and books and books. And, you know, what did that do? I mean, that really fundamentally changed us as a society. And it's the same going on right now. There is a fundamental shift in the way that we are perceiving ourselves and perceiving others, and how we're connecting with others through social media. And it's important to internalize that and be aware of it.
Keith, what do you think? Are we accomplishing less as a result? I mean, I don't know. Imagine somebody, Lewis and Clark, they had to go like across the country on foot and horseback and come back before they could sort of really tell their tale. Now, you know, we have lunch and we tell our tale. We have, you know, dinner, we tell our tale. Or, you know, we take a swim and we tell. Does it cut into what we actually accomplish?
Well, I guess you could argue that by helping people communicate with each other, it should actually facilitate communication and help people get through their day a little bit quicker. But I also think the downside to that is, you know, what we're looking at on these social networks is news. And one of the things about news is how fresh it is. So there's this constant desire to just constantly be checking your Facebook postings just to see what's current. And that could actually have a negative effect on productivity.
Yeah, could have. Elizabeth, if it doesn't, is there a downside?
Well, I certainly think there's a great upside to social media as well. So we are, as we're talking about, we're connecting. There's many positives. If you are going through a hard time, I had a friend a few years ago who was in a terrible accident, was in a coma. So his family was able to update everybody quickly and constantly about the status. You could send, you know, your best wishes and offers of help, that kind of thing. And we connect. We all have connected with people that we're happy to connect with, that we've lost touch with. So there's a big upside here. All I'm saying is we it's not too late to think about how we use this continuously going forward.
I wonder if it's not already changing around us, if people aren't already kind of tempering their, hey, I did this, I did that. There are always patterns and evolution social interaction. I have a little sense that people don't do as much of that as they did. It's passé to put up, I did this, I did that. What do you say, Elizabeth?
I think so. I agree. I think so, that people are starting to notice. And also, as we get a little older, I think the generations behave differently, too. And so I do think that. And I hope that's true.
Well, we've got plenty of me in the arts, in music. Here's Madonna with M.I.A. and Nicki Minaj. Give me all your lovin'. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're asking this hour of social media and all of our posts and updates, our kids, dates, meals out, vacations, promotions have turned us into a nation of braggarts. Elizabeth Bernstein writes in the Wall Street Journal. She says, yeah. She says, it's folks, this is bragging and it's out of control. We've got a lot of pushback on that as well, and it's very interesting. Certainly, social media have changed the way we interact, the means we have for interacting. Elizabeth joins us today from Miami. Keith Wilcox at Columbia Business School, a professor of marketing there, is with us from New York. David Gerzoff from Emerson College joins me in the studio, owner of Big Fish PR branding firm. John in Lowell, Massachusetts. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yes, I just wanted to add a comment. I was thinking really how different the, you know, getting involved with these social networks is different from face-to-face contact and communication with others. Face-to-face, of course, is more spontaneous. I could see you walking down the street. I could see your flaws, whatever, you know, mm-hmm. I perceive as flaws. But the difference with social, these social networks is, such as Facebook, is you literally have to create and assemble a self. of yourself, whether it be a lie or not, you know, and that's what people see when they see your profile page.
Yeah.
So what this creates, I think, is one has the ability to even hide perhaps certain self-perceived flaws of oneself. For instance, I could have a bald head and I could say it's shaved online. And to bolster my grandiosity, I create a rigid self, you know, that's grandiose and wonderful, and everyone's liking it. You know, it's much like holding up a mirror, to myself, looking at my reflection and seeing everybody inside the mirror, and I'm talking to them,
right.
You know, rather than talking face to face and having that kind of spontaneous, maybe even appearing shy in person. But
yeah,
very
yeah.
different online.
John, you're good, and I think you're really on to it. I mean, and the key thing there, John, saying David, you must create a self when it comes to, I mean, that's part of the deal. You have to put a profile up there. You have to put a persona, a self up there, and once you get into that, you've got to shape it. And how are you going to shape it?
Yeah, certainly. This is one of the things that I deal with my students every semester is building that online persona that separates you out from the crazy activities that you do as a kid in college and prepares you for the sort of that next jump in life, which is that next career. And there's where I'm dealing with these students is there's a couple places. There's a tremendous amount of social media use, resumes, online career building.
Yeah.
So things like LinkedIn and Monster.com, and also online dating. Like right now, I think the number is about 1 in 5 relationships in the U.S. start through social media and the internet. So,
and a lot of those will be people checking out your profile, sort of what you've been up to. Who are you, quote unquote, as presented online?
Yeah, and what we're taught as kids when social media really wasn't around was to put your best foot forward and to make yourself look pretty or handsome, and to you don't want to tout the deficiencies that you have. You want to tout that you are the best. You are the best potential mate for to be in this dating pool, or you are the best potential prospective employee to be out there to get hired.
But
to
in
do
those
this
days,
job.
I mean, employment suitability, you might learn in a hurry, but a lot of our character in those days would emerge over time. You didn't present it all at once. You didn't, first meeting with a person wasn't a resume recitation. If you were shy, as our caller John says, well, that was part of what you were, and they would feel that. They would know that. Maybe that's a good thing. I mean, you're going to put up all aces every time? Who's going to believe that?
Well, I mean, that's the thing is that with things like LinkedIn, you literally are your own self-publisher. You're your own editor. You put up, you can pull out what you didn't do well in, and you put up what you did put in. So what you're putting out there is the best you that you could possibly assemble.
Is this what you're teaching your students how to do? Is that a good thing? I mean, is this all the brand that is you? Because it's not just professional relations online. It's very intimate social relations, pretty public, but still these are also real friendships. Do you want to be, all glossed up for your buddies all the time?
Sure. So there's two sides of that. So there is the marketing side of it, which is yes, you are trying to sort of win that battle, that marketing war to win that position. But there is also that conversation that happens on social media that is very authentic, that is very, this is how I feel about this specific topic. And you see this a lot, actually, in the political campaigns that are going on right now. People sharing, not saying we're the best or this is the best candidate or whatnot, but this is how I feel on this, particular issue, and really getting behind it. And that's where you start to see, that the sort of this genuine caring and feeling coming in.
Let's go to Olivia calling from Savannah, Georgia. Hi, Olivia. Thanks for calling. You're on the air. Hi, Olivia. Are you there?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a young artist in Savannah, and I just wanted to add the comment that it's probably true for most young professionals now, but I think it's inflated as an artist in the community of artists and galleries. If you don't have a blog or a website or a place to brag about yourself online, you may as well be completely invisible. It's become a necessity. There's even a college course on self-promotion and social media.
So
I just think that's interesting.
How do you feel about it as an artist? Do you welcome it as a way to sort of get out a view of what you're doing, or does it feel oppressive?
Well, it's something that I've never been that good at. I have kind of a self-deprecating sense of humor, So I've had to work on it, but it is really useful to be able to, you meet somebody and you can go look them up online and there they are, and you can look at their whole portfolio instantly. And so, I mean, it has its ups and downs.
Yeah, it cuts both ways. You can look it up, and so you will, but you're feeling that pressure like you have to do it. Keith, I mean, what about the self-deprecating in a time of social media? How on earth do they compete, you know, or thrive in that environment?
Yeah, I guess being self-deprecating is kind of tough, but I think that David kind of hit on this point, and your last caller just mentioned this. You know, in certain, depending upon your career or the nature of what you do, self-marketing is a critical component of your social network and social media engagement. You just have to constantly be doing that. But with that said, at a certain point, the conversation needs to change, particularly on like places like Facebook, from self-promotion to really kind of letting your true self go and really expressing your true values to others. And I think that that's the part where people are having a hard time with.
And to know which you're doing when. I mean, up on the one hand, you're self-marketing. How do you do that and convey the complexity of any human life, emotional, otherwise? Let's go to Los Angeles, California. Freddie. Hi, Freddie. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I enjoy Endpoint, but the main reason living in Los Angeles, I know about Endpoint, is because of social media. And I'm able to listen to Endpoint live with no tape delay.
Right on.
I'm able to carry on the conversation and tell my friends about this great show that's on the East Coast. And when I listen to Endpoint, I hear a lot of East Coast callers, and I'm trying to build your base out here. And I enjoy Facebook and Twitter every day. I'm logged into it quite a bit. I check in a couple times a day, but I enjoy how I like in Facebook is that it levels wherever you live. You can be in Massachusetts, I can be in California, I can talk to my cousin in Canada, and I can know what all of us are doing, and I don't feel that's an invasion of privacy. I enjoy it.
So for you, Freddie, it's information and access. It's not bragging. It's, hello, here's the world.
Yeah, it's not bragging at all. You know, I check in when I go out to a restaurant, or maybe I take some photos when I'm on vacation, and I enjoy when I see people's comments. I want to share what I'm doing with them. It's just life plus.
Life plus. Well, I guess everybody agrees with that in a way, and you're celebrating that, and we love it, and we're so glad you're listening right there, Freddie. I appreciate your call. I mean, Elizabeth, there's this great range online. You know, you've got listeners saying, oh, you know, people still just didn't get enough show and tell in school, so they're still doing it. Or JG says, this is like those annoying Christmas letters that only talk about the fabulous vacations and so on. On the other hand, Elizabeth, Freddie loves it in L.A. Sean says, I think Elizabeth, this is writing online on Facebook, Elizabeth may be a bit bitter. Personally, I love hearing what friends are doing. If they planted an organic garden, lost some weight, their kids did something special, I never feel as though my friends are bragging. I'm surprised that Elizabeth reads everything as bragging instead of supporting the great things your friends are doing. What do you say?
I think it's hilarious. I do. Hey, look, I wouldn't say I'm not bitter, but I don't think I'm bitter about this. I feel that it's in the eye of the beholder, but also what happens is we just don't know how others are perceiving us. And I agree. I find all sorts of interesting things that I can look at Facebook, as I was saying before. I can, you know, find out what someone's reading. Here's an article or a show I didn't know about. But again, it is a matter of tone when we are talking about our personal lives. And I don't need the same people going over and over about their perfect life. And what's really interesting to me this week and the feedback that I've gotten is the people who wrote me, tons of people who wrote me who said, you know, the people online who bother me are the people who bother me offline. So maybe it's a personality thing. And maybe the self-deprecating people are not the ones who are annoying online.
There's an art to social interaction, whatever the medium. Austin, Texas, Nicholas is calling. Nicholas, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to talk about how social media being so new, it's really in its baby steps, and I think that our society is still really catching up on how to use it. It's just like the printing press or the telephone. We're still figuring out. I mean, I think people, for the most part, still think that the internet isn't real. It's not a real world where you can act like different people sometimes and things like that. When the reality is, and I think we're catching up to it lately, is that it's actually it's just like the telephone. You know, it's just another form of communication.
So it's real because it's there and we're interacting on it all the time. If we didn't think it was real, would we misuse it in some way? Is that what you're suggesting, Nicholas? Or
I grew up with the internet. I'm 28 years old.
Yeah.
I first got online when I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, the big thing was getting into chat rooms and things like that, and social media didn't really exist yet. But yeah, people didn't consider it real. They would, you know, and they still do, go to YouTube and look at the comments, and you'll see people being completely nasty to each other, and they never do that in public or over the phone to people. They're still getting used to that, and I think the bragging thing is the same thing. It's people, I got a friend who, like, posts every time he goes to the gym. He wants people to know that he's going to the gym. I mean, yeah, it's self-promotion, but it's not everybody does that. And I think if you have a problem with people bragging, maybe you have a problem with your friends, because social media is all about changing kind of customizing your interaction with people and seeking out. You can totally modify everything. You can keep people from knowing some things and ask people to share more things with you. And I don't think it's anything really to worry about as far as the bragging part.
Nicholas, I appreciate your call from Austin. That is a great phrase, David Gersoff. It's all about customizing your interaction with people. There's a level of intentionality in that that we don't like to associate with sort of sincere, free-flowing, honest engagement. On the other hand, humans being social animals they are, there's always a kind of customization that goes on, I suppose, in every moment of an interaction. But if it's heightened by social media, if you have to put more effort, more attention, intention into that customization, does that make us less real? Does it make us more puffed up? Does it just make us... Is that just the new reality, as Nicholas says in Austin?
I would almost argue that there's less attention that's put in there, because the tools that we have, these social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter, they're almost like coloring books, right? These aren't blank books where we can write whatever story we want.
Facebook encourages a certain kind of interaction.
There's a structure. You don't write a long paragraph. It's a quick update. Here's a link. Here's a photo. Same on Twitter. You're limited to 140 characters.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to stay within the line, stay within the bounding box that they give you. So it's a very fast update. So where that is, it's almost becomes a little bit mindless and brainless in the update. And in some cases, you know, that's where, you know, people could really see this as being a braggadocian mm-hmm. behavior. And not saying that it's not, but, you know, to be aware that, you know, this is our communication platform that is growing. Both Twitter and Facebook every day are getting more and more users. We're getting on there. We're using it. We're sharing more. And really what I think it comes down to is not the voyeurism or the exhibitionism. It's sharing. It's this human quality that we've had ever since, as you mentioned, in caves, wanting to be something, part of something bigger, wanting to have your hand on the wall with someone else. That was the handbook before there was Facebook, right?
But the sharing always comes in an envelope. It always has a character. Right? A nature to it. It can be done artfully or artlessly, in a welcome way or in a way that's overwhelming.
Sure. So this social media has become a very super simple, stupid way for us to share. It takes 2 seconds. You can do it through GPS on your phone. You could do it through your laptop. You can do it from an airplane. And it's great. It's great to be able to stay connected that way.
Keith, if we get better at this as we go, as it becomes more subtly appreciated part of our lives, how do you think it will change? Will we be bragging less or somehow communicating more effectively?
I think communicating more effectively is a great term. I think what is kind of missing from social networks and social media in general is that richness that you have with face-to-face interactions. And I think as the tool evolves and the ability to communicate at a much deeper level starts to be integrated into these sites, then I think you will start to see perhaps maybe less bragging, a little bit more of us being our true selves, things like that.
How about Elizabeth? Is it a coloring book? If the lines are always going to be drawn this way, as David Gersoff says, does Facebook mean this is just the way our interaction is going to be? We're waiting for the evolution of the tools to be more nuanced online.
Exactly. I really agree with that. I think that right now it is a bit of a coloring book, but what I'm really hoping is that we'll learn to make it more of a conversation. So it'll become less of a monologue and more really responding to other people and actual sharing, as we're talking about, as opposed to just, I'm going to share about myself, but I'm going to share with you. I want to know what you're doing. You're going to share back at me. It's more interactive.
On the other hand, as long as it is what it is now, it certainly calls out that here's what I'm up to. Did people on balance seem to sympathize with your view, Elizabeth, and your feedback? I'm sure you got plenty or not.
I got plenty of feedback. Mostly, yes. I got a lot of people saying that you're so right. But I did get called out on it, and this isn't the first time this week I've been called bitter.
Okay. Well, it is a realm not new any longer. We've got, you know, callers and guests this hour grown right up on this. But still, shaping the way we interact, the shaping the way we behave, and it's fascinating to see how that works. Elizabeth Bernstein with The Wall Street Journal. Thank you so much for joining us today, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me.
Elizabeth Bernstein in Miami and Keith Wilcox in New York at Columbia Business School. Thanks for joining us, Keith.
Thank you.
David Gersoff with Emerson College with me here in the studio. Great to have you. Thanks for coming in, David.
Always good to be here with you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thanks for being with us. Thank you.